You are listening to Fly here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Melissa Rodway, and today I have Christian DeBoer with me, who is the general manager of Jaya House Hotels. We're talking to each other on Zoom from Siem Reap, Cambodia. So welcome to Fly, Christian.
Good morning from Cambodia. Hello, everyone.
Yes, yeah, so morning here, but late at night for you. What time is it for you, Christian?
It's currently 12 minutes past 9 in the evening.
And it's 33 degrees, you were saying.
Yes, indeed. It's nice.
We've actually had a heat wave here in Toronto this summer, too. So we're probably having some similar temperatures, but still a little bit different in Canada compared to being in Cambodia. So, Christian, you and I met each other. It was around this time 10 years ago. It was June, July. I was in Cambodia doing this whirlwind trip around Southeast Asia. And you were working at Hotel de la Paix in Siem Reap at the time. And I had the great fortune of spending a day with you. And of the 4 to 5 months that I was traveling, I have to tell you that this day always stands out for me, and I still talk about it. During the time that I was there, you took me with you to see two different projects that you were working on that were in connection with the hotel. So the first one we went to was this women's sewing school. So you had brought in women from rural Cambodia because a lot of women in those areas were dying young due to physical labor of brick making and having so many children and just having no rest. So you had created this sewing school with a colleague of yours, I believe, to bring in these women to learn how to sew, to help them set up their own business. And I got to see that, which was amazing. And then we went to see the orphanage, Green Gecko. And on the day that we went there, there were 100 bikes delivered to all of these children who were street kids or had been orphans, had no parents, etc. And it was such an impactful day, such an emotional day, and I loved it. And I, as I said, I still talk about it to this day. So I still appreciate the opportunity that you gave me that day to see this part of Cambodia and the work that you do for these people.
I'm having goose pimples while you explain to me, for two reasons. One, the sewing school that was actually under guidance and under management in brackets of the monks at Watthamnak Pagoda. I merely raised the money to build their new school together with MasterCard, credit card company back in the day. And we indeed helped women become independent, get a skill so they can earn their own money and are not dependent on someone else or having to choose other means of earning a living. But funny you mentioned Green Gecko, Green Gecko Center for Street Children. Yesterday, literally one day ago, was indeed their 15th anniversary. All of those kids that you've seen 10 years ago are now obviously adults. And I become emotional when I talk about it, but in the 10 years since you've seen them, they have become amongst the brightest in Cambodia. I mean, there's somebody in there that's currently studying to become a doctor. There's somebody in there that's studying to become a veterinarian. There's somebody studying economics. There's another one studying law. So this is kids that have grown from literally eating garbage bins in a tourist town to, thanks to the unimaginable way of love given to them by Tanya Palmer and her team, to them, have now become seriously one of the best adults you could ever find. One of them, bring it back into today's world, has actually spent on his own accord, because he realizes where he was 15 years ago when Green Gecko opened, to now, 15 years ago, he, as a thank you for the chances he has been given in those 15 years, has spent the whole day packing rice bags, because obviously today, thanks to COVID-19, we're in a very different crisis, but packing rice bags of 20 kilogram rice bags, which are going to be given out this coming weekend to people in Siem Reap province, about 50 kilometers away from here, that have literally nothing. Their rice bags that they're going to get, including fish shells and other stuff, will give them food for, I don't know, 5-6 weeks or so.
Wow, amazing. So
if you would recognize them today, the little faces from them have become adults now, and their personalities are better than mine will ever be. No matter how hard I try, it doesn't matter. And just because they realize what a chances they've had, mm-hmm. compared to some of the other ones here in what I think is beautiful Cambodia.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's an amazing story. I'm so happy to hear that. For me too, thinking about that day, I still feel goosebumps about it as well. So it was amazing. We're going to talk more about that because you, even since 2010, have been involved in so many initiatives in Cambodia that are so impressive, and we definitely want to get into that. But I always like to provide people with a little bit of background. So let's go back into your history a little bit. So Christian, where are you from? Don't worry, we won't dig too far.
I'm born and raised in the Netherlands, Rotterdam. And I left the Netherlands at the age of 26 because I wanted to improve my English. I still at that point in time believed the Netherlands was probably the best country in the world. So this was really just going to be 6 weeks and then thank God back to the Netherlands as quick as I could. I ended up in London for 7.5 years and ended up working for a gentleman who is still today one of my personal heroes, Richard Branson, Virgin. And through him, I've obviously been able to travel the world and also met some of the most spectacular people, including Nelson Mandela and some others that have helped me form, I guess. Then 9/11 happened. Everyone was sent to Heathrow or Gatwick Airport to deal with the planes. And I was shouted at by a particular gentleman, and something in me switched and said, this is it, I don't have to accept this kind of behavior from anyone. So 6 months later, I left. And whilst my education is actually hotel and catering management school, I had never worked in a hotel.
So what were you doing for Richard Branson?
I worked with him, I took care of his VIPs and CIPs and other.
Oh, I see.
My education was hotel and catering management, but I said I've never worked in a hotel. I think I'm too arrogant to work at a Holiday Inn. I'm Dutch, which means I'm straightforward, people say. I'm also an Aries, which doubles it, I guess. So I have issues in giving respect to people if I don't think they deserve it. I don't give respect to people just because of their job title. I give lots of respect to people without a job title, but they're doing something for someone else. So I realized that for me to work starting off and a junior position in the hotel, that might not be the best choice. And then during one evening, I suggested, let's move actually to Canada, or let's move to Australia, or let's move to France. And I was told then that I couldn't move to France or any French-speaking country because I don't speak French. Now, that's like a red herring in front of a bull. 6 months later, I was working and living in Paris. That hotel was taken over by Mandarin Oriental, which fell through, and MO offered me a job in New York or Singapore. I chose New York, London, Paris, New York, but had an interview with the general manager at the hotel in New York, which didn't go very well, because I said what I thought, and that's sometimes not the right thing to do. So yeah, New York was not given to me, so it had to become Singapore, but I'd never been to Asia. All I knew about Asia was Chinese takeaway food in plastic containers. So I had something like, you know what, let's go. If it goes right, fantastic. If not, there's an airport, I fly back and everything is fine. Then stayed in Singapore for 2.5 years. And from there moved to Vietnam. There my mother was diagnosed with, terminally diagnosed. So I gave up my job to move back to the Netherlands. And at the airport in Saigon, received a phone call from Hotel de la Paix about a job in Cambodia, but I'd never heard of this place. I'd never heard of Cambodia. I'd never heard of any of that stuff. So I declined. Better if you find someone else, because I have other things to do, like taking care of my mother. But since I had nothing to do and they had nothing to do, we ended up talking for 2.5 hours. And eventually they said, you know what, we'll wait for you. And that's what they did. They waited 7 months until my mother unfortunately passed away And I moved to Cambodia, and that's now 14 years ago. And
Wow.
I'm in love with this country. I would never be able to leave anymore.
Really, this is home for you.
Very much so, yes.
What is your love of the hotel industry or the boutique hotel industry? What is it about working in that business that appeals to you so much?
The fact that I can decide, and this might sound strange, but I don't particularly like the hotel industry. And with that, I mean, I do not understand why, if you in Vancouver, Toronto, when you've booked a hotel through any channel, you've most likely already paid that particular hotel. Why is the first thing they ask passport and credit card? Why do they ask for a credit card? Is it because, well, you might look like a thief and you're going to run away? Is that the reason? So I don't understand it. It has nothing to do with hospitality. In certain parts of the world, now hotels charge for a resort fee. They charge for the mini bar, pathetic prices for a Diet Coke. Wi-Fi charges, breakfast is extra. All of those things that should all be. That's part of a hotel. So I don't understand why all of those things are charged because it doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand why and it's more of an Asian thing. Here in Asia, in some hotels, you get a welcome drink, but it's never particularly good. It's cheap tea. And no, either give me nothing, that's fine, or give me something that I actually want. And a cheap, sweet tea is generally not what I want. So all of those kind of things, I don't understand why in close to all hotels in the world, now you have your coffee and tea making facilities. It's almost always that Nescafe thing that no one can open up, and especially not at 6:30 in the morning. And when you then have it open, it's far too far. It's half on the floor. You're walking with your wet feet through the coffee. You think all of those stuff, has no one actually stayed in their own hotel to realize that those things are annoying? So I wanted to do all of that different. And I wanted to create a hotel where many, many hotels have on their CSR page that they want to be part of their community and all of those things. It's lovely, but those are just marketing words. And it generally isn't the case. I wanted to, as one of the few hotels, especially then in Cambodia, hire only full-time staff. I wanted to have money to pay for my staff's English classes. I wanted to have good healthcare, like I have, for all my staff. And I wanted us to be plastic-free. And because I'm the boss, I can decide that, and we did that. And that has had quite a spectacular response from the various guests that we've now been able to have, thanks to the new types of media. So Instagram, Facebook, but also TripAdvisor. TripAdvisor, it's difficult. I mean, yes, you can buy reviews on TripAdvisor. You can buy 10 of them, 20 of them, but you can't buy 3,000 of them. Once you've reached a certain amount of reviews, then people should have a rather accurate view of what a particular hotel experience is going to give you or not.
Is your staff all Cambodian?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So you're the
Everything.
only person from another country.
All my good jobs are done by Khmer people. In the olden days, when you were 10 years ago in Siem Reap, certain hotels, absolutely not Hotel de la Paix, but certain hotels then, the tour guides were not allowed into the hotels. They had to wait
I
outside.
remember that. I remember that.
That's
Not at your
discrimination.
hotel, but at other hotels, yes.
That's discrimination. Try that in Canada, where the tourists can go into a hotel, but you as a Canadian cannot go in because, well, it's a bit embarrassing if a Canadian goes into a hotel. That was Cambodia 10 years ago. That's offending. At Hotel de la Paix, and since, a very active approach to make sure that that absolutely does not happen. People come to Cambodia not to speak to me, a Dutch person, they would have gone to the Netherlands. If they come to Cambodia, they come to experience the Khmer. They come to experience Cambodia. They come to see the temples. They come to see what this, I think, magnificent country actually all has to offer.
Yeah. I do remember that because we stayed at, I think, two different hotels. One was with you, and one was, I forget the other one. And we had the most amazing guide who took us to places that were sort of off the tourist trail. And we had such a great day with him. And then he took us to, I don't know, some restaurant or some hotel. And we were like, come in, come in. He's like, nope, I can't. And it was heartbreaking after he had given us all these amazing experiences and stories about his life that all of a sudden that boundary was there. I do remember that. So I'm glad that
Well,
that has changed.
it's not changed in all hotels yet, but
Right.
still the case even in 2020 in some hotels, but very much not at my hotel because it's wrong. So all my good jobs, all my senior jobs, my hotel manager jobs, so the good salaries, they're all done by Khmer. In fact, one gentleman who, when you were at Hotel de la Paix, he was your dishwasher. He might have washed your dishes. And in the past 10 years, he's gone from dishwasher to now being in charge of the sales and marketing for my hotel.
Wow, that's amazing.
I'm very proud of him.
I am
I'm proud.
sure.
And with that, I said I have 208, because I now have 208 staff, 208 almost similar stories of people that have worked tremendously hard, but in our way to be where we are.
So, Christian, to me, it sounds like you actually use this boutique hotel industry to do all these amazing things for the country. I mean, it's a backdrop. It's a beautiful backdrop, these boutique hotels, but really, I feel like it's your platform to help this community.
It's a vehicle. It's a
It's a
vehicle.
vehicle. Yeah.
My
So,
number one priority is my staff. And that really filters through in every single thing that we do because they're the ones taking care of my guests, not me. I can try to talk to as many people as I can, but I can't be there 24 hours a day. I can't make up every room, every bed. So it's better for me to take care of my staff. And that sometimes goes really quite far in issues. And because they're the ones actually really doing the work and running the show.
yeah. So what is it about Cambodia that you love so much? Why is this home for you now?
It's the people. It really is the people and their enormous optimism, their enormous love for their country, and perhaps it's Buddhism, it largely is Buddhism actually, and just their culture of making an effort and working very, very hard for their future. I mean, out of my, I don't know, 208 staff, I'm pretty sure 99% are the breadwinners for their family, and that includes their parents and any potential siblings they might have. It's the love of the people. And anyone who's been to Cambodia and has met Khmer will almost always agree.
Yes, I agree. Of all those countries, that was my favorite by far. And I felt that these people have been through a lot of difficulty and tragedy, but the happiest people, the kindest people, the most generous people I had ever met, to be honest.
That's Buddhism. That's
Amazing.
Buddhism.
Do you speak the language?
Nope. Not a word. Not even 5 words. So, I've always believed, and first, I work 6 days a week, 10, 11 hours a day. So that's generally enough. If I would learn Khmer within a year, I'll be fluent. I mean, the language is actually not that difficult to learn. But my life is not going to change. So what? I speak another language. I mean, doesn't really matter. The language in the hotel is English. So since we hire from within, if a, I don't know, a waiter wants to become a supervisor, absolutely, if you have the skills, you could become a supervisor. But apart from the skills, you also need to have the English language ability. So it's an enormous stick, it's an enormous carrot. And for the first, I don't know, 2.5 years or something of Jaya House, we co-funded about 50% of all English classes for all of the staff. Not full, but only 50%, as another motivational stick for people to invest into their own future. And so they actually do have a future. I didn't want to pay the full 100%, for the very simple reason that I think people need to buy into something. If you use your own money, even if it's only $5 a month, something is a lot more valuable than when it's someone else's money. I think at my own personal education, at the age of 14, 15, I never really valued my own education. I mean, it was, why would I ever learn another language than Dutch? Because it was completely free.
Yeah.
And because I never really had to do anything for it. I think if I would have had to work in the morning and then use a part of what I earned in the morning to fund my own education, I would have done a lot better than what I ended up doing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
It seems to be working, and almost all of them have actually indeed had about 2 years of additional English classes.
Amazing. Yeah. Are there many expats living in Siem Reap, or are you one of the few?
Siem Reap is still, thank God, a very small, not a city, it's a large village. It's a large group of houses. And yes, there are some, I don't know how many, but there are indeed quite a few expats living.
What is the population of Siem Reap today?
Siem Reap city itself, I think, is around 20,000. That's the village. Greater Siem Reap, because we're largely a farming community. 10 minutes away from here, there are rice fields where people are living, and they live from their rice fields. So if you would add those people, then you end up in about 1 million probably in Siem Reap province.
So the reason that you came back on my radar is that someone had sent me an article from Butterfield and Robinson about this recent initiative that you co-created during COVID. This is called Three Hotels Join Hands. So tell us what this is all about and why you wanted to be a part of this.
COVID-19, first of all, it seems to be, when I watch CNN down here, going like a virus all over the world. She seems to be infecting a lot of people right now, but not here, and not in Thailand, and not in Vietnam, and not in Laos, and not in our part of the world. Now, a negative person would say, yeah, that's easy. If you don't test, you don't get. But I actually, the current figures, I'm doing some top of my head, is zero people dead in Cambodia. And I think it's 135 people infected, and 134 of them have actually been cured, and there's one person still in hospital. I actually believe those figures. And why do I believe the figures? My hotel is surrounded by two pagodas, two Khmer churches, basically. If there would be a sudden dramatic increase in death, then I would have noticed the additional amount of burnings or funerals. And to me, it seems that the amount of funerals actually gone down. There's less funerals now than there used to be. Plus, Siem Reap is a rather open society. Almost everything is on Facebook. And Facebook is our BBC or CNN or whichever other broadcasting company. All of our news is on Facebook. I would have known through Facebook if the figures wouldn't have been correct. And this same story is indeed for Laos and for Thailand and for Vietnam. I think it's got something to do with the fact that we largely live outdoors. Most people do not have an air conditioning system, so everything is open air. Plus the fact that social distancing is in our nature. In the West, we shake hands. In Cambodia, we do the praise symbol. So human touch is, we don't have that really in our culture. So therefore, that the whole social distancing thing is born into us, basically. So I've never really been afraid of COVID-19 in Cambodia, but we have a much, much, much bigger issue now. Due to the complete 99 or 100% drop in tourism, in January, the first hotel started to close. And now I think 98% of the hotels are closed. With that, all of those jobs are obviously gone. Unlike Canada or the Netherlands or some other countries, we do not have a social welfare system. no one gets any money from anyone, which means that if you've lost your job in January and thus have not had a salary since January, I mean, what are you going to do? How are you going to eat? How are you going to feed? Now, for the first few months, that was easy. Just sell whatever you have. Sell your motorbike, sell your cow, sell your pig, sell your this, sell your that. But now, after 5.5 months, everything is sold. There's nothing left to sell. On top of that, we're since about 3 weeks now, the monsoon season has started. So it rains about 4 times a week for an hour, but it's good tropical downpours. That means the beginning of waterborne diseases. And that then means if your child gets infected with dengue fever or something else, it needs to go to hospital. Some of those parents simply don't have money anymore to buy medicines. So that's the issue. It's basically some form of poverty-related diseases or very simple hunger. And so we started in April the 20th with giving more or less 450 plastic-free and styrofoam-free meals every day to the people at the provincial hospital and to other locations in Zimbabwe. And that's something that we've been doing every day since April the 20th. And I think today we're reaching 38,000 meals donated to date. And it's something that we have to continue because the need is actually getting bigger.
And it's 3 hotels that are participating in this.
3 different hotels that are all collectively making an effort in doing this, yes. It's Jai House River Park, Milbury Boutique Hotel, and Tree Line Urban Resort, the 3 of us.
Amazing. The restaurants or the chefs that you have asked to create these meals, it's helping in so many different levels.
I mean, I have an empty hotel right now. Mm-hmm. So we could have done it in our own kitchen, but there's no real point for that since my staff still gets a part salary. So we've chosen to do it at local restaurants where local Khmer people would go for dinner, but they ran out of money, so that restaurant would have been closed. So the meals are now coming from 4 different restaurants and are thus keeping a livelihood of 4 complete families. In the beginning, it was actually quite funny because we really had to teach people the concept of plastic free and styrofoam free. And no, we don't want styrofoam and we don't want plastic, and we want it to be in lotus flower leaves or banana leaves, just like it was done 10 years ago. But that took one day of training, and now that's normal, and now people actually see the value of it. So yeah, the help is needed, and it seems to be getting worse.
Scary. And you're running 2 hotels, so that's a lot that you're responsible for.
Well, one of them is closed.
Right.
Jai House Angkor Park, given the fact that my timing clearly was not so good, opened 8 days before the beginning of COVID-19. And during those 8 days, we were actually a little bit lucky because one of the 6 guests that we've had in those first 8 days was actually a journalist from Condé Nast. And it was afterwards named as one of the hottest new hotels in the world or something by Condé Nast, and has been in about 6 articles written by Condé Nast US and UK over the past few months. But yeah, all the staff is still there, but the hotel is closed. And the first one, Jai House River Park, is indeed open, but only partially, with instead of 36 rooms, now only 10 rooms.
Wow.
But yeah, staffing wise, we still have all 208 staff.
Wow. It's a lot. And you did an amazing bike ride with them today. So you're trying to keep morale up. So that's important, isn't it?
We have to keep laughing. We have to keep smiling. We have to keep believing in the future, that there is a future, whilst slowly but surely working towards a more longer term solution for all of this. Yeah, we need to keep laughing because otherwise the alternative is far worse.
Yes. Tell us about the Refill the World initiative that you co-founded in 2016.
Really quite simple. And its simplicity is always the thing that works. As I said, before we opened Jai House River Park, I wanted us to be plastic free. So that's easy. So you then literally go through the hotel and see that's plastic we need to replace. One of the main things is those horrible plastic water bottles that you get in every hotel. Now, if it's in a cold country, you might not drink it, I don't know. But in Cambodia, you drink 6 or 7 a day of them. That's every guest, that's every tourist. That adds up to 4.6 million plastic bottles a month. Now, we have no recycling system here, so they all end up in the river or the ocean or just get burned. So I thought this is not going to work. So, given the fact that I really wanted us to be plastic free, I thought if I give everyone a canister which is recyclable and they can take home and use in the gym or do this or do that, I don't know. As long as I give every guest a new one, then they don't have to use plastic. So I called a few of my acquaintances in town and said, well, if one of my guests would come to your cafe, restaurant, bar, and with one of those bottles, would you fill them up? And would you be able to do that with drinking water for free? And I said, yeah, of course, no problem. Again, that's relatively in our culture to give water anyway. So, okay, cool, that was done. But then we realized how simple it was. And if we can do it, then more hotels can do it. So quite quickly, more hotels joined. And then the first hotel in Phnom Penh joined, and then in Laos, and then in Thailand and Myanmar. And now it's in 18 countries.
Wow.
In 18 countries, it works really quite simple through a QR code on the back of each bottle. Your mobile knows where you are. Your GPS system inside your mobile knows where you are. So if you're with your mobile, scan the QR code, then your mobile will link the Google Earth map, which is also on your phone already, with your GPS, and therefore tell you automatically, all within half a second, the nearest location for you to fill up your bottle is down the road on the right. And
Wow.
in 18 countries.
That's amazing.
It's very, very simple, but it works. For this reason, I was awarded by Afar Media in New York the Travel Vanguard 2020 award or something, which unfortunately I wasn't allowed to go there to pick it up. But yeah, I mean, the concept is so simple. We can all change, we can all eliminate plastic as long as the willpower is there. We had a similar story with the coffee machine, where he initially, I mean, I'm a coffee drinker, so I wanted good coffee machines in each of the rooms. And the guy who was selling the machine was very, very happy because he had those plastic capsules. Each cup is fantastically fresh. It's very good, blah, 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 blah. I said, so sorry to have invited you, but aiming to be plastic free, so I cannot have a plastic cup. I need to find a different solution. I'm sorry to have wasted your time. So he left, a little bit upset, I think. He had to write his report back to head office that now this meeting didn't go through because there was one of those eco people who wants no plastic now. What he didn't know, what I didn't know, is that on the same day, someone, some company in France also canceled their order for that same reason. It took the company 1 month to make an alternative, and now we're plastic free.
Oh,
It, so
wow.
it's we as consumers, me as buyer in that case of only 40 coffee machines, I have the power, and we all have the power to make a change. That's how that happened, and now we're plastic free and 99%, and it's now a way of life. It's normal. It's easy.
Wow, that's a huge difference. I love the water bottle part. I don't drink coffee, but I'm still impressed with the coffee part. But I do find traveling, I mean, there's so many different water bottle filters on the market, and I've never found one that I like. So this concept that you've come up with, these water fillable stations, that's incredible.
It's a very simple way of doing it. It marries technology and the fact that every single one of us now has a phone. All of our phones have GPS, all of our phones have Google on it. So if you marry those three, then this works. And that's really what has happened and what is happening and what I would love to be able to expand and become the norm, basically.
So, Christian, I did a little digging and I learned that you are the first foreign hospitality executive to speak to students in North Korea. Not everyone can say that.
Yes, that's correct.
Amazing. Yeah, so how did that come about?
I was invited to do a speech to the University of Commerce in Pyongyang due to some other meetings that happened about 2 months before that at my hotel. About the week before the meeting in Singapore between Kim Jong-un and Mr. Trump, there was a meeting in my hotel with some people. And one of them invited me to come to Pyongyang. And I said, yeah, fine, of course, no problem. Thinking this would never happen anyway. So it's, of course, no issues. Yeah, fine. And about 5 months later, receiving an email, do you remember? And then I was basically put on the block because he asked me to come to Pyongyang to do a speech at the University of Pyongyang. And as it was part of a group of four, I have to admit, I have rarely been so scared in my life about anything. But boy, was I wrong. My speech went fine, was good. 400 students and the most amazing people. We've traveled throughout big parts of North Korea, both countryside and large parts of the city, and not only the things that they want to be able to show tourists, but also off the beaten track things as far as that's possible. It's a very different image and very different reality than the image that we have in the West. I have to say, I was upon landing at the airport, brand new airport, really spectacular airport. Empty but spectacular airport, all my worries were gone. And the best thing is the fact that it's spotless. Every single person takes charge of the little bit of greenery in front of their house to make sure that the grass is nicely cut. There's no garbage on the streets. It's people were immaculately dressed. That's actually the thing that I've noticed the most. And so, not just the people that now those are here for the tourists to see, but also, I know I got a haircut in Pyongyang, as you do. The other people in that hair salon, each of them was immaculately dressed. Every single person had been in the metro, been in the underground. We went to the DMZ, so the border between North and South Korea. Every single person immaculately dressed.
How long were
And
you there?
5 days.
5 days. Wow, that's exciting.
Yeah, it was this spectacular country.
And you were saying the people were very warm and friendly and welcoming.
Yeah,
That's
and very
great.
good English.
Very good English.
Yeah, surprising perhaps, but yes, very good English. Very polite. And yes, I mean, time has stood still there. My hotel room was probably the same as in Toronto 1960 or the Netherlands 1960. Most likely, I don't know, I wasn't there. The time has stood still. And he asked me, for instance, butter high up, asked me about Theresa May. She's the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. But she'd already gone a year, which he didn't know yet. I was the one who thought, no, she left. She left. And now the current one is called Boris Johnson. There was a year delay in what they know and
Interesting.
all of that stuff. So, but yeah, went to KTV, we went on a some kind of a cruise on the river there, and just simply spectacular people. Nothing different from you or me. Absolutely the same. They love their children, they want what's best for their children, and I'm sure the average Canadian loves Canada, just like the average Dutch loves the Netherlands. The average North Korean loves North Korea. I think that's normal.
Yeah.
So no, I was very honored and flattered to be allowed to do this. And
Amazing experience. That's incredible.
sure.
So, Christian, you have done a lot for the people of Siem Reap. You've been there for, you were saying, 14 years. It's a small village. I have been there. It is quite small. I have to think that you have some sort of nickname in this town. What would that be?
White Khmer. According to some of my friends, they call me the White Khmer.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's really cute. It always makes them laugh because apparently the literal translation, White Khmer, in the Cambodian language means something, could mean something very different. Now I haven't figured out exactly what it is, but every single time they're laughing, it's probably something funny.
And is your social circle mainly Khmer people, or is it a mix of expats and Khmer? It's a
It's a
mix.
mix. The people that I socialized with when you were here 10 years ago, those are the same people now. Many people haven't left. There's two types of expats. They're either the ones that realize after six months that the old electricity outage, the fact that not everything always goes all right down here, that we are still a developing country. For some people, that's too harsh, and other people are okay. And the people that were okay then are still okay today.
Do you ever go back to the Netherlands to visit, or are you always in Cambodia?
I haven't been back to Netherlands in about 6 years.
Oh, wow.
I have issues with the fact that we in the West sometimes are so ungrateful for what we have. Now we seem to be believing, including myself, don't get me wrong, I was probably the worst out of all. We seem to be believing that we demand things, that we deserve things, whilst I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we deserve. Up to a certain age, I am who I am, is because I have always been very lucky. My parents were never alcoholics. I have never been abused. I had the fortune to go to school. I've never known hunger. On the rare occasion that I was sick, my mother would have medicines for me. On the one occasion in the hospital, because I fell off my horse, I was brought to hospital and treated and all of that stuff. So I've never really had any issues. And yet, there have been a lot of times that I was unhappy. And then you come to Cambodia, where most people have not had all of those fortunes, and they're a lot happier. So it's that kind of way of thinking. That's, I think, what Cambodia does to you at its core. It changes your way of thinking, and it makes you realize how enormously lucky we, you and me both probably, collectively are, at least myself.
Yeah. And you were saying this earlier. I mean, a lot of people during lockdowns around the world have complained about not being able to go to the movies or get their hair cut or all of these really trivial things. And you're in a country where people are fighting for their lives basically at the moment.
I was watching Dutch television, and there was apparently a demonstration in the Netherlands because of hairdressers were not allowed to open up. So people thought that was inhumane, and we now freedom of speech and free, we're a free country. We can do whatever we want to do. So we want to get a haircut. We deserve that right to get a haircut. And you think, really? Is that all you're worried about? Okay, but a different life, I should say, to what we have down here, where haircut really for a lot of people is the last thing on your mind. And here for some, not all, it's more where do I get my meal from? And I'm thinking of the 150,000 Khmer people in Siem Reap alone that have lost their jobs due to the fact that there's no tourism right now. It's also the best time to see the temples, by the way. But there's no one. There's absolutely no one. The BBC, thanks to a local crew that actually live in Siem Reap, were able to film at Angkor Wat, and where there's absolutely no one. That whole temple complex of hundreds of square kilometers, zero people. It's unbelievable. So beautiful. That's how fortunate I am also, for being able to.
Amazing. So we were saying earlier that you have used the hospitality industry as a vehicle to do good for people and for the country. And this is a really good message that all of us can probably look into what we're doing to help other people. So do you have any advice or any thoughts on ways that we can just be more community minded and to go beyond ourselves to help other people?
Well, there seems to be a trend right now on the various social media channels of now pay it forward. That is something that I think is so simple and so easy to do. And it's so easy to do for all of us. But it is so nice to be on the receiving end of that. And it doesn't matter if it's your coffee at Starbucks or anything else, really. So something as simple as that could make somebody smile for a week. I posted on my own personal Facebook page, mainly because somebody in my family, it's their birthday soon, and that instead of the usual 2019 and 2018 type of birthday presents, what about planting a tree this year instead, or giving a buckload of people a lot of food for a day or a week, or let's clear a landmine instead of a brand new iPhone, which you really don't need right now. So I hope that the silver lining of this whole COVID-19 thing is that we become more aware, that we become more aware of the fact that there is only one planet, and the fact that we're all identical people. We all love our children, if you have children. I don't, but people have. And that we really all want one thing: happiness for our family, and that results in food on the table and all of that stuff. So if that could be the silver lining of this whole COVID-19 drama, then it has had a purpose.
Absolutely. We are now going to do a segment called On the Fly, and I'm asking all of my guests these 8 questions about travel, your habits, your bucket list items, and more. Here we go, Christian. Number 1, what and where was your first trip that gave you the travel bug?
Ouch. The travel bug was probably given to me by my parents when in 87, we went on a trip to the United States, which then was unheard of. I mean, you didn't go that far. But we took a 5-week car journey from Los Angeles via Texas, Florida to New York and Washington in the car, every day 500 or 600 kilometers. I think that that's what gave me my travel bug and wanting to see more.
Number 2, what country do you think has the best food?
Indonesia. And I don't know why, but a couple of months ago, I was actually in Bali, and I had some chicken skewers, but with the absolutely best peanut sauce I've ever had. It's one of those dishes that you can eat forever, I think. Very simple, very basic, very cheap, but oh my God, that was amazing.
Do you get to travel a lot? I mean, I know you work all the time.
I used to. In my Hotel de la Paix days, yes, I traveled every month. But now I don't. And that's merely due to the fact that our industry has changed. 10 years ago, 12 years ago, social media didn't exist. TripAdvisor was non-existent. So sales was more knocking on doors of travel agencies. Now, as a hotel for the past 3.5 years, I don't have that money to travel. So I would have had the money if I would have terminated my staff halfway in the low season, go home, and I would have saved a lot of money, and then I would have been able to travel. But given the fact that I decided to offer everyone full-time employment, it meant that I had to cut elsewhere, and that was my travel budget. We've never been anywhere, not to any trade show, not to any things. And thanks to TripAdvisor, thanks to Instagram, thanks to all the other social media channels, and very simple word of mouth, we used to be doing quite good. I said we're empty right now, unfortunately, but when travel was here, our guests were here too.
That's out of your control at the moment, unfortunately. What essential item do you bring with you on every trip?
Sports. For me, that's relaxation. The moment I wear shorts, I'm relaxed.
That's
for
hilarious.
Work, I always wear long trousers every day. So the moment I wear shorts, and oh, I'm on holiday. Even on my day, I wear shorts. even if I don't leave the apartment, I still wear shorts because I'm relaxed then. And it's amazing how that plays in your head. It's shorts is what I bring.
Love it. Number four, what is your best travel tip to pass on to others?
Some people tend to arrive at the airport last minute. I tend not to do it. I tend to arrive really 2 hours before, even in Siem Reap, where our airport is so small. But I still arrive 2 hours before because I can have a coffee first, relax, everything is fine. So you start your journey really relaxed.
I like that too.
Yeah. Actually, there's a link between myself and Canada.
Let's hear it.
Years and years and years ago at Hotel de la Paix, we had an arts exhibition of a Canadian artist called Blake, and I'm saying Ward, but I might be wrong on that one. It's literally talking about Blake Ward. He made, which was daring then, he made human sculptures, quarter-sized human sculptures in bronze of how a human body would look like after it had been affected by a landmine.
Oh, wow.
Now, that exhibition had already been shown in New York, in Montreal, in Toronto, in Paris, but never in a country that's actually still having landmines till today.
Right.
And the total value of that art, I think it was 12 pieces, was $250,000. And I remember the conversations about security and how we're going to do this, how we're going to do that. And we eventually, together with Blake, decided Cambodia is so safe. If I'm going to have a security guard standing at the door, and then people start to think, why? What's that all about? What's there? Oh, let's go and see. But if you do nothing, then it's fine. So we had his whole art collection worth a lot of money, spectacular art, in the lobby of Hotel de la Paix with no security.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So sorry, that was my Canadian. But he lived in a town in the middle, northern middle bit of Canada.
Well, there's a lot of those.
Yeah, but a really small little town with a very strange name.
Okay. And
fantastic gentleman.
I remember when we were there, actually, there was some art exhibit happening in the hotel. It was an amazing hotel there.
Yeah, we had art exhibitions every 2 months.
Oh, right. Okay. That's the fun of a boutique hotel. That's the part I always enjoyed, is there's so much freedom, right? Like, artistically.
I really mean, this unit, you can see them on Instagram. 2 years ago, I made our Christmas tree. I mean, we're a Buddhist country. There's a hotel in Siem Reap that imports its Christmas tree every year from Canada. Now, to do that, it would cost me just over $8,000. So no, I'm not going to import a Christmas tree from Canada, no matter how beautiful they might be. But I still need to do something to resemble Christmas. But we're a Buddhist country, so I don't want to make it too in your face either. So 3 years ago, we made our Christmas tree out of 24,000 individually hung white feathers.
Wow.
The picture's on Instagram. And last year, we made the Christmas tree out of 15,000 individually hung glass straws, which was really beautiful.
That's cool. That's some nice artistic freedom right there.
You said, what can you do as a boutique hotel? I can be different. I don't have to ask head office anything. I am head office. So it's a lot more creative. It's a lot more, in my opinion, special.
Number five, is there a certain item or souvenir that you would look for on each trip from a country?
Nothing.
No fridge magnets for you, Christian?
Nope.
Nope.
Good. All my belongings fit in one tuk-tuk. Or 3.5 suitcases. No value on anything.
Do you have a car in Siem Reap? You wouldn't need one, right? No.
I used to have a license. It took me 80 lessons, though, since I'm quite... I haven't driven a car, and I guess that's a good thing. I know, for 15-20 years.
I love that. I'm not big on driving either. To live in a place like Siem Reap, where it's really, you know, a moot point, really.
Tuk tuk. I walk to work right now.
Yeah, that's nice. Alrighty, number six. What is at the top of your bucket list? So this could be an adventure, a destination, an experience, or anything you want.
For now, I just want to make sure I raise enough money to keep on feeding people.
Good one.
That's the thing that is really on the forefront of my mind for the past months. That's it for now. I mean, when I want something, I will do everything to make it happen. The year after, you were in 2010, you said? Or 2011?
Yeah, 2010.
Okay, well, the year after you were there, and this is how distorted media is, unfortunately, in around the world, but 80% of Cambodia was underwater, 80%. And 20,000 people died. And myself and Green Gecko, and two others, we then raised enough money to buy week-long supplies for 7,000 families affected by the floods.
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, where were you last?
Bali.
Oh, that's nice. And when were you there?
It was quite fortunate, just a week before the lockdown. I was on the last plane from Singapore to Siem Reap before the airport closed.
Wow, you were lucky.
We were with six people on that airplane, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, here's the big one. Number 8, fly, discover, experience, repeat. So this is the fly travel radio mantra. So if you could add a word after discover and experience to reflect how you feel about travel and adventure, what would you say?
I think it's a combination of 3 words, actually. Make a difference or choose wisely. Do your research, things like that. When you travel, we all should make a difference. We all should, in some strange kind of way, buy local, stay local, if that makes sense, if you're traveling, because that makes the biggest impact. I think it was the UN who calculated that if you stay at a local hotel, so a hotel owned by whichever country you're in, you employ on average about 2.4 people per day.
Wow.
And that's really, I mean, so if I would go to Toronto now and stay in a Toronto-owned hotel, just me on my own would basically give a job for a day to 2.4 people. It could be from the doorman to the receptionist to the taxi driver to the waiter and the dinner, you know, any of those things. All combined is about 2.4.
Wow.
And that's for if you stay local. If you stay in an international chain hotel, it's a lot less.
Yeah. I am going to have to let you go, sadly, but for anyone who has an attachment to Cambodia, who's traveled there, is there any place we can go to help with the meals? What can we do?
Very, very, very simple. Each meal, it costs us $1.25 in US dollar cents, and it's payable through an array of channels. It's all on the website called www.hotelsjoininghands.com.
Hotelsjoininghands.com.
And awesome. That's really what we need. And every single meal, 100% of it, every single dollar, I should say, 100% of that gets turned into meals. Feel free to message me personally. My email address is on the website, I think. I'm willing to do anything, whatever it takes, to indeed help those people that are here at the provincial hospital.
Absolutely. And when the planes start flying, we should also come and stay at Jaya House. Get that hotel full again.
If we still have a hotel by then. So yes.
Oh, gosh.
Let's try. Let's do our best to see how it's all going to turn out. Thanks for this conversation.
Thank you, Christian. So nice to speak with you. It's great to see you again. And appreciate your time.
Anytime. Have a wonderful day.
Yes, you too. Have a good night.
Fly.